to today's board meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board for the San Francisco Bay Region. Unfortunately, Chair Hacker has had a family emergency and will not be in attendance for our meeting this morning. I'll be facilitating today's meeting in her absence. Our meetings are hybrid, so in addition to in-person participants here in the conference room, we will also receive public comments through our Zoom meeting platform. If you're not physically present and intend to comment, you need to be in the Zoom meeting space and not watching through our webcast. If you have not already received a link for the Zoom meeting, you can visit our website and register through the link on the agenda. After you register, you will receive a Zoom login link providing access to the meeting. If you are in person and wish to speak, you may also register online or with the assistance from our team at the registration table just outside so you know to call on you. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted until it's your turn to speak. Our staff will then promote you. Please unmute yourself at that time so that we can hear you. And when you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking any questions you may have, you will be placed back on mute. For those in the room here waiting to speak, you will be called by name. Please come to the podium so that we can best see and hear you. And all speakers will be given 3 minutes for commentary. Please state your name and your affiliate organization, if applicable, when called upon. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to a good meeting. We'll now ask Julie Haas, our clerk for today's board meeting, to call the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Board Member Ransom.
Here.
Board Member Beelin, absent. Board Member Batty.
Here.
Board Member Gunther.
Here.
Board Member Kissinger.
Here.
Vice Chair Young.
Here.
And Chair Hacker is absent.
Thank you. We have a quorum physically present for today's meeting, so welcome everyone. Item 2, our public forum. I would like to now open our meeting to the public forum. I want to remind everyone that the public forum is for items that are not on the agenda today. You can speak on those items at the appropriate time. Items that are not pending or an impending matter, meaning they are not about to come up on our agenda in the next few months. Please consult our board clerk, Julie Haas, who is seated here in the front of the auditorium, if you have any questions. I will call on each of our public speakers who have registered to speak under the public forum portion of the meeting. One additional note, if you are remote and have not been called, please raise your virtual hand on the Zoom platform by clicking on the reactions icon on your screen and then on the raise hand icon. That way we will know to call on you. Again, each speaker is allowed 3 minutes and will be timed and notified via the online timer visible on the screen. Thank you for your understanding and your participation. Julie, do we have any online registrations?
Yes, the first speaker is Jeff Ellsworth. Online.
All right. Perfect. We'll wait for Jeff to come online.
Good.
Jeff, are you there?
Are you hearing me?
There we are. Go ahead, Mr. Ellsworth.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning, board and staff. Thank you for the work you do. Jeff Ellsworth, member of California LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens, and former mayor of St. Helena, Napa County. In light of recent 2025 tragic fatalities of two Latino waste workers in the Bay Area, both in the jurisdiction of the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board, the same jurisdiction as Clover Flat Landfill Upper Valley Disposal Service in Napa County, where a Latino waste worker death also occurred, we are broadening the scope of the California LULAC Napa Valley Waste Workers Advocacy Committee to encompass the Bay Area region as well as more broadly through California. In light of ongoing national concerns regarding civil rights and functions of democracy, and remembering what occurred in Germany in the 1930s and 40s with disregard of workforce protections, the commitment to racial equity and protection of civil rights is up to each of us on a day-to-day basis on a board level, staff level, and personal level. The Water Board Racial Equity Action Plan, combined with current state and federal laws, as well as Water Board Resolution 2021-0050, should be urgently implemented towards addressing these systemic breakdowns. We need to be leading the way on this here in California. I'm back today to submit the national level LULAC resolution passed on this matter early last month. This resolution is also being submitted to the Board of Environmental Safety, the California Labor Department, and other relevant public oversight agencies, as well as the California Joint Legislative Audit Committee, in relation to recent findings of great concern related to OSHA understaffing and inspection deficiencies. The audit was pushed forward by California Assemblymember Liz Ortega, who asked, how many workers have to die before these concerns are addressed? I'll repeat, what she asked was, how many workers have to die before these concerns are addressed? The hearing also included Assemblymembers Haribadian, Ransom, and Calra, as well as California Senator Smallwood, Cuevas, Laird, and Cortese. I'm submitting as well a link to the hearing to provide context. The hearing starts at 46 minutes into the tape. Problems at OSHA have a direct correlation to matters related to the Water Board. The Water Board plays a critical role in oversight of these waste sites because other agencies often reference or even defer to Water Board reports related to on-site inspections. Clearly, with multiple fatalities in the jurisdiction, a systemic problem is occurring that your inspectors and analysts must recognize. The tragic deaths and mistreatment of these Latino waste workers highlights a larger public safety and environmental concern when waste workers are untrained, fearful, or unable to register complaints involving toxic and fire-prone waste impacting the broader environment and public waterways that are purview of the Water Board. Again, I ask this matter be agendized by this board and or staff who recognize the magnitude of the problem and have this held in hearings with sworn testimony at the soonest possible juncture. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ellsworth. Your information has been heard, and our executive director obviously will work with us to see if it can be agendized at a future date.
Thank you.
Julia, do we have anyone else?
We have one more, Ben from Friends of Mission Creek.
Sorry, one second. Apologies.
Can I just ask a question?
Absolutely.
Just related to the last speaker. Eileen, can you give us any update on any communication we've had outside of meetings or...
Right. Well, there was the investigation into the landfill, and the accusations was a very thorough report. It was conducted over a year period, we've been coordinating with the other offices. We've dealt with the water quality. So our mission at the Water Board is to preserve, enhance, and restore the Bay Area's water resources. We are not the regulatory agency for workers' rights. I hear what Mr. Ellsworth has to say. I empathize. And yes, OSHA is the appropriate state agency where workers are to file their complaints. When our inspectors go to the sites, they're there inspecting for the water quality. We do not have the authority to deal with labor issues. So I hear Mr. Ellsworth's concerns. We're very empathetic, but that is beyond the authority of the Water Board.
Thank you. And I appreciate Mr. Ellsworth coming before, I suspect, several entities to bring his concerns to the forefront and keep it present in all of our minds. I very much appreciate that. But I also appreciate our understanding and sharing of what our scope of work is and isn't, and it sounds like OSHA is the correct avenue here. And I've had my own experience with OSHA over the years as in the utility industry, and I hope that he'll get resolution and support in that area.
Yeah, and there's multiple investigations going on, and Water Board staff have been cooperating with the agencies that are leading the various investigations.
That sounds good. Julie, we'll go to our next speaker.
Yes. Ben from Friends of Mission Creek.
Got it. We'll wait for Ben to come online.
Hello. Can you hear me?
It is. The floor is yours, Ben.
Hi. Regional board members, I am Ben from Friends of Mission Creek. Friends of Mission Creek has been concerned about the continued permit violations causing San Francisco to dump excessive sewage into both Mission Creek and Islayes Creek, as well as Ocean Beach and the Northern Waterfront. At this time, however, I'd like to express our concern about the failure to adequately protect public health and safety in San Francisco. There's no reason to protect our waters if we do not protect our health and safety first. San Francisco has been on a downward spiral over the last 15 years. In 2010, San Francisco, under then Mayor Gavin Newsom, published its sewer system master plan. This included projects to address flooding, but also a tech memo titled Regulatory Considerations for Wet Weather Backups. That document points out that there was no regulatory requirement to prevent the sewage backups that are the primary source of flooding in San Francisco. With that finding in 2012, then SFPUC General Manager Ed Harrington dictated to the SFPUC Commission that San Francisco would pull all the flooding projects out of the master plan. Since that time, San Francisco has been a case study in the normalization of deviance. Every attempt to avoid dealing with the sewer backups has led San Francisco deeper and deeper into normalizing what most other people in our society would find deviant or unsafe. San Francisco, like a spoiled nine-year-old, yells, "You can't tell me what to do." The state of California, like an overly tolerant parent, has been accommodating, attempting to placate the spoiled child. This leniency has only encouraged San Francisco to double down on its spoiled child rant. In 2021, under pressure from the US EPA, the regional board negotiated the cleanup of an abatement order. Unfortunately, this had loopholes, which San Francisco happily drove a tanker truck full of sewage through, closing the Pierce Street outfall at the same time. The closure of the outfall caused sewage backups and increased the depth of flooding over 1 foot. It also led to increased raw sewage discharges into the area of Crissy Field, where water contact sports such as swimming and kiteboarding go on year-round. It's also one of San Francisco Bay's Clean Water Act Section 305 impacted waterways. There's still time to address the behavior. There must be an adult in the room. The state of California can stand up now and address this in a clear and effective manner. Friends of Mission Creek requests the regional board make a clear statement to help address San Francisco's tirade against its citizens. Thank you.
Does my voice carry? Oh. Funny. Thank you, Ben, for your comments. Any questions or comments from the board? No. Okay.
I know there's so much going on with the city and county of San Francisco. I wonder if Eileen might just give us the most recent update.
Yeah. So just to let you know, we hear Ben's concerns, and I get emails weekly from the Friends of Mission Creek, so I understand very clearly their concerns. And we're in ongoing confidential settlement discussions with the City of San Francisco, EPA, and so I can't say anything at this point, but we are very well aware of the issues and are meeting regularly with them on it to resolve the issues.
Thanks, Eileen. And I'm just going to add, thank you to Ben, right? Ben, who yes. came and spoke. I think this public forum part of our meeting is just so important and an opportunity for people to voice their concerns. And I think we could all use more of that, not less. So thank you.
Thank you. Continuing, Julie, do you have anything else online?
No additional registrations.
Is there anyone in the room who would like to speak? Seeing none, thank you for your participation. I will be closing the public forum now, and we will be moving on to our item number 3, which are the minutes of the August 13th, 2025 board meeting. Included in our board packets and posted online are the draft minutes from the August 13th, 2025 board meetings. Are there any edits or revisions to these minutes recommended? No? Seeing none, I would like to ask for a motion and a second to adopt the August board meeting minutes.
I'll move.
And I will second.
Received. So, see here, Board Member Kissinger was the motion, and Board Member Ransom was the second. All right. Julia, can we have a roll call vote to approve the August meeting minutes?
Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Young.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you. The August 13th board meeting minutes have been adopted by the board. We'll now move on to item 4, the chairs, board members, and executive officers' reports. First, I'd like to welcome Sean McGuire in person. He's our liaison to the State Water Board for some brief updates. Sean, we're grateful to have you join us in person for our meeting today. The floor is yours.
Great. Vice Chair Young, thank you so much for having me here. It's great to be here in person. As you say, I'm normally on Zoom, but I felt it was time. It had been too long as your State Water Resources Control Board liaison. I think it's very important and makes sense that we have these in-person meetings and discussions, so thank you for having me here. You'll find my update is largely further updates on what I had provided to you last month. So I won't belabor the details of all the issues that we have going on at the State Board. Just wanted to provide a couple of highlights for you. And then, as always, happy to take any questions or thoughts that you may have that I can take back. On a personnel side, on a board side, I do want to share the good news with you that Chair Joaquin Esquivel and Board Member Nicole Morgan were confirmed by the Senate last week for their reappointments. So we're very happy to have them with us for another 4 years on the State Water Board. So that's good news. And in hiring, I wanted to share that we recently hired a new Deputy Director for Water Rights at the Water Board, and her name is Juliet Christian Smith, and she was most recently with the Union of Concerned Scientists, and so we're very happy to have her joining us at the Water Board to help us with many important matters, and she'll be starting a little bit later this month, so please help me welcome her once she gets going. On policy issues, some of the things I talked about last month, in particular, the update to the Bay Delta Water Quality Control Plan, which, as you know, is incredibly important for management of the entire Bay Delta watershed, the estuary, and helping to ensure reasonable protection of our fish and wildlife and balancing that with all the different competing needs for this very important water supply. We are moving forward with that process. I gave you an update last time, and I think one thing that has been changing is a little bit of our approach in terms of how we're conducting our hearings and when those are occurring. So the most recent schedule is to conduct hearings on September 24th and September 25th on the July Water Quality Control Plan update draft that was released by staff. A few weeks ago, there was also a supplementary modeling document that was released because of some of the proposed changes in the Water Quality Control Plan to the unimpaired flow approach. We felt it was important to share some of that technical information with the public. So because of that, we moved the hearing dates to the 24th and 25th and extended the public comment period to September 29th. So those are the most recent dates that I have to share with you. In other challenging matters, we're also actively involved with the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act as the agency responsible for groundwater sustainability plans that the Department of Water Resources finds inadequate. The largest basin in the state is the Kern sub-basin. It's a critical hub for agriculture. It's a critical location for groundwater banking activities that happen in the state, and it's a very important resource. And there's actually, I believe, 20 groundwater sustainability agencies, roughly, within that basin. And so coordination amongst that group has been very challenging over the last 10 years.
Excuse me. The audio just went.
Hello, can you hear me?
It just went. It's very choppy.
Please.
Can you try again?
Yes, can you hear me?
It's choppy.
Okay, I'm testing. Is this working at all? Any better?
That's better.
Oh, good.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, let us know if that breaks up again. The good news is that the Kern Basin, those 20 plus GSAs, have come together. We had a hearing in February to consider whether to place that entire basin on probation. Ultimately, we decided to give them 6 more months to work through some of the issues. They had made a lot of good progress up to February. We gave them 6 more months. They have amended their plans again and come back. And the staff recommendation, which just came out a couple of days ago, is actually to go ahead and return that basin to the Department of Water Resources oversight. Ultimately, that's a board decision, and that board meeting is scheduled for next week, September 17th. But everything that I've heard and I've seen thus far from my perspective is very encouraging, and just happy to see a lot of progress made there. It's not to say that their work is done or that the basin's reached sustainability. They have a lot of work to do. It's a question of whether the plan is adequate enough to proceed, to implement, to move to achieve sustainability by the required deadline, which is 2040. Last time I also talked about, so shifting gears a little bit from water management to money. Last time I talked a little bit about our Clean Water State Revolving Fund and Safe Drinking Water State Revolving Fund intended use plans, which we adopt every year. We did adopt those again this year. And the reason I bring this up again is because there has been a lot of uncertainty and lack of clarity about the federal government, about how funding has in some instances has been paused or held back. And so this is one of those cases where we were at some point unsure how that process was going to go this year on the state revolving fund side, which is so important for funding our critical wastewater projects, recycled water projects, safe drinking water projects around the state. So what I wanted to report to you is that everything I've heard is that those dollars have been flowing smoothly through the SRF program from our federal partners. So we've not seen any delays in that process on that front. So I wanted to provide you that update. On the state budget, there's a lot going on in the state budget. And in fact, this week is the end of the legislative session and the deadline for the governor to sign any new legislation. So there's some balls in the air on that front as well, which if I had more of an update for you, I would certainly share it, and I'm as anxious as many. But the reason I bring this up is because part of that decision-making process is whether and how much to appropriate under the Proposition 4 climate bond that was passed last year. So we're still waiting on that. We've had to put a little bit of a hold on that process as we wait for the budget issues to provide greater clarity. So hopefully we'll know a little bit more about that soon. But there's a lot of funds there for water projects, and we're very excited to move forward with that process. And then the last area I wanted to provide an update on today is also has to do with money, but it's more about fees. Yeah, I think you know we're predominantly a fee-based organization. That's by a decision of the legislature. We have very little general bond funding, so we do need to charge fees to our permit holders in order to support the important programs that we have, by and large. So next week we have an item on our agenda. It's an annual item to review the fees for our water quality regulatory programs, which include all of your programs, drinking water and water rights. And the good news is on the water quality side is that because of the budget challenges that we've had in the past year and some modifications to staffing resources and so on, we're actually in a good place financially from the fee revenue perspective. So we staff is not recommending any fee increases for this year. So I was happy to come and report that to you, because I know it can be a challenge for our regulated community when they see large fee increases that increase the cost of compliance for the important work that they do. It's something that we certainly try to minimize, and so hopefully that will carry forward in the decision next week. And those are the updates I have for you, and again, happy to be here and also happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Sean. Any questions, anyone? Andy?
I just want to say congratulations on hiring a very talented person. I know Juliet Christian Smith quite well, and it's always an indication of a healthy organization when it can attract and maintain quality staff. So I think you're going to be very pleased with having her as part of the Water Board.
Thank you. We're excited to have her get started.
And Board Member Batty.
Hi, Sean. Nice to see you in person. Thanks for being here.
Always about this time of year, I ask the question, what's the water rain outlook look like for this winter? And I don't know if you, last year, I think we went through a long description to, at the end of which to say, it might rain, it might not rain. So maybe that's the same, but I will say in Half Moon Bay yesterday, we woke up to rain, like not just fog, real rain, super exciting. And also that we recently traveled south and both Lake Casitas and Lake Kachuma were looking very healthy. So I wonder if you could just give us a high level of how's the water volume looking this year and any input on what the Farmer's Almanac is saying.
I wish I had the answers to that part and with greater certainty, but I think just in the Mediterranean climate we live in, when there's always some unknowns about how the water year is going to develop. That said, I do believe I will be getting a hydrology update with some of those predictions at my next meeting, I believe, or in the near future. And what I will promise to do is bring that back
next month
to you next month. But I will say, yes, we've had a really good 2 years ago. We had a great water year, a wet year. This year was solid, a very average, strong water year from that perspective. And the temperatures have been very cool. But one thing that we've seen, as you shared, is that most of our reservoirs filled to capacity or near, which is a great place to be. But what we've also learned is that it doesn't take much, maybe one or two dry years, to be right back into a drought again, and for those reservoirs to be quite low. So it's something that we're always paying attention to and trying to be careful with our limited resources. I will be back with more.
Thank you, Sean.
Yes, thank you, Sean, for the update. We appreciate it, and thanks for being here in person.
Thank you.
That was fun. I'll now go to the board members to see if they have any updates. Board Member Ransom?
None.
Board Member Kissinger?
Nothing from me.
Okay. Board Member Gunther?
I'll just add that the rainfall in Half Moon Bay is being driven by a marine heat wave in the eastern North Pacific, and if that heat wave abates slowly, this winter we could have some very, very wet storms. So, you know, it will, it's going to rain and then it's not going to rain. Both of those things will occur.
I love that we have the scientist and the farmer.
Oh, yeah,
this opposite ends of the table.
Very scientific.
That sounded pretty scientific, right. But I will say it has been very, very unusual year on the coast. Extremely cool, actually cold. And now with the rain, it's very warm, very humid. I feel like I'm in New England again.
Well, this summer was quite cool until you look at historic data and you realize that this was an average summer from 30 years ago.
Very interesting. And Board Member Batty.
I'm just going to mention that, and I don't have the date in front of me right now, but next month I'm going to be attending, San Mateo County is doing a climate conference, a sea level rise conference. It's a county that is deeply impacted by sea level rise and flooding, and so I really applaud their efforts to bring all the players together from the planning community, environmental community, nonprofit, public sector. I'm going to be attending, and if you look online for San Mateo County Climate Conference, I think Thrive is the organization that is leading it, and I think this is their fourth or fifth year, so I'll be attending that, and I'll share more after.
Thank you very much. And I don't have a report personally other than to say it was raining on the way up here from Milpitas through about Fremont, which I thought was weird. So thank you, everyone, for finalizing that for me. Next, I will call on the executive officer for the executive officer's report. Eileen.
Great. Good morning, Vice Chair Young and members of the board. I'm not going to spend time today discussing the excellent write-up on the cleanup of PCBs in Redwood City that Dave Elias and David Tonaway prepared for the executive officer's report, other than to note it's a great example of our ongoing work to restore and enhance the Bay Area's water resources. I did want to spend a little time talking about the period of transition we are experiencing here at the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board. As part of our ongoing commitment to workforce planning and development and program effectiveness, we recently implemented a reorganization of our surface water divisions to strengthen staff capacity and enhance program delivery. This initiative reflects both our responsibility to support staff well-being and our dedication to providing timely, high-quality service to the public. A key goal of the reorganization was to balance workloads across divisions by strategically aligning related programs and consolidating program staff to dedicated sections. By aligning staff resources, we can manage our programs more effectively while maintaining the flexibility to address emerging priorities. This reorganization established a new section within the Watershed Management Division dedicated to creek, wetland, and bay habitat protection program. This move strengthens our ability to manage a growing workload in this program while also enhancing technical skills, program consistency, and accountability. The reorganization was initiated by our great management team in response to staff, program, and budget changes that created a significant imbalance between divisions. And then last, but certainly not least, is the bittersweet retirement of many of our knowledgeable, experienced, and significant contributors to the mission of the Water Board, individuals who have provided invaluable work and support for our staff and our programs overall. Robert Schiff, who you'll be hearing about later today, who was key in helping get the nutrient watershed permit developed and working with our stakeholders, is one of these contributors that will be greatly missed. His counsel, his work ethic, and his passion, not to mention his quiet humor, will be an incredible loss to our team. Today, we honor Robert for his contributions to the state of California and water quality in the San Francisco Bay region as he nears his retirement from state service later this month. Robert started with the Central Valley Board in Fresno, and luckily to us, he transferred to the San Francisco Bay region in 2002. In addition to his abundant contributions to the Water Board, Robert is an incredible source of wisdom and guidance for staff, managers, dischargers, and myself included. He sees the big picture, evaluates options, solves problems, and develops sensible paths forward, all while guiding and recommending creative solutions to the many complex issues we face daily. He has earned the trust and respect of staff, the regulated community, and the many stakeholders we engage with. Robert will be a tremendous loss to our agency, though he leaves a wonderful legacy of mentorship, creative insight, and pragmatic problem solving. We wish him well and hope our paths continue to cross as he explores new adventures as he travels with his wife. Robert, I want to thank you. It has been a pleasure to work with you. And on that note, I turn it back to you, Vice Chair Young.
Thank you, Eileen. Your sentiments fall upon all of us here, so thank you for that. With that, before we proceed to board agenda item number 5, I will administer the oath for today's hearings. All relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses or any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating their name, their affiliation, and whether they took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this process. Additional written materials will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise or raise their hand. Do you promise to tell the truth?
I do.
And now, Eileen, we will continue with item 5 on the board calendar for today.
Great.
Eileen, I just wanted to ask about your report about the change in the watershed division to create this new section. I spent a little time this weekend, nerd that I am, reading, going on the website of the Lower Walnut Creek Watershed Program, where a tremendous amount of restoration as natural infrastructure is being conducted in real visionary manner, in my opinion, including the decertification of the levee so that the Corps isn't involved. Is this new section, is that where we will be doing our thinking about natural infrastructure for wastewater treatment and habitat protection. I mean, is that where this is happening at our agency?
I'd say some of that work crosses divisions. So we spent last week, the MPDS division, working a whole day last Thursday with the Bockwick community, talking about their nutrient permit, nature-based solutions. And so a lot of our programs aren't just siloed. You know, there's a lot of work that happens between MPDS, watershed and planning, do a lot with, you know, we are all responsible for climate change within the organization. And a lot of the work in particular that the watershed and planning do overlap. This is, you know, they'll be doing some of this work along with, you'll hear from Ross later today when he reports out on our strategic work plan, but we issued over 200 401 certs last year, and that body of work is growing as the core, you know, as the federal agencies have been doing less. There's just more to address climate change, so, and feel free to chime in, Keith, but the work of the watershed planning divisions, I mean, all the divisions keeps growing, but in particular, we realized that the watershed division needed this other section to really keep up with the workload of and part of its emerging workload with the changes in the work that the federal government's not doing that's now coming to the 401 cert program and the watershed program. But what you've referred to, a lot of our work overlaps. It's not just one division.
Well, I guess that was where I was going, which is that the interdisciplinary nature of these solutions to these problems is something that I think will require us to take steps to change our structure a little bit. I'm just very glad to hear that this is a step that we're taking and that we are recognizing the interdisciplinary nature of these the solutions to these issues. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chair, Board Member Gunther. And I guess now we're going to get to item five.
Oh, great. Thank you. So the revised tentative order would issue waste discharge requirements to Berryessa properties to implement the Berryessa mixed-use development project in the city of San Jose and Santa Clara County. The project will include construction of up to 850 residential units, 480,000 square feet of commercial space, and 0.9 acres of open space. Streets, stormwater facilities, and other associated infrastructure will also be constructed. The project will permanently fill 0.34 acres of freshwater pond and 0.26 acres of seasonal freshwater wetlands. To mitigate those impacts, the order would require the discharger to create 0.7 acres of open water and fringing wetland at the project's site. The project will create or redevelop 9 acres of impervious surfaces at the project site. And our team here, who worked very quickly to get this done because this was prioritized because it is a housing project, is here if you have any questions.
That sounds good. I guess we're going to go to our board members to see if there are any questions or comments.
I do.
Board Member Batty?
I really appreciate you saying that it was prioritized to because of that housing. I've not seen an 850-unit housing project in a long time. So, and I assume a percentage of that is affordable housing?
That's correct.
Okay, great. I guess I was just struck by, I mean, this is, again, regulated by us because it's not regulated by the Corps, the U.S. Corps, and so it's now falls to us as state waters. And I just kind of wanted to get a sense of, how, I think we've only maybe seen one other of these at the board, and I just wanted to get a sense of how the process is changing, how it's changing the timing of things between how we used to do it, where we would work alongside the Corps and they were the lead, and now it's different. So can you describe the implications?
Yeah. Sure. Thanks, Ms. Batty, for that question. And this is an example, actually, Dr. Gunther, of what you were just noting, which is that in response to U.S. Supreme Court decisions limiting the reach of federal waters, we're seeing fewer instances where there's a federal authorization for fill of creeks or wetlands And that's actually quite a bit more significant in Southern California and in the desert regions, but also here in the Bay Area. And so the result is that projects that previously we would have authorized under the executive officer's signature are now coming before you, and you may recall the Cordelia Truck Skills up in Solano County is another set of waste discharge requirements. I'm sure there was one other, but it escapes me just at the moment. Northgate, another. Anyway, so just to say, the list is going to become longer.
Yes.
Because this is the mechanism that we have, aside from some general permits, Sean, that the state board has authorized that we sometimes are able to, if it falls within the limits, we can use those to authorize projects. So with that said, you know, the work that we do with project proponents or with the local municipalities is really quite similar. You know, we're looking at, you know, what are the resources on site, what's proposed to be filled, you know, does the design appropriately avoid, minimize, and mitigate impacts. Without going into too much detail, a couple of challenges is that we are stepping in where, in some cases, the Corps used to play a role and now they do not. So the Corps' role generally is to confirm jurisdictional delineations. They have continued to do that to some extent, but we have more staff who are trained in delineation, so they're playing that role. One place where there's a significant gap, at least in my opinion, is the Corps often will do consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or National Marine Fisheries Service for special status species. Under section, well, and we don't want to go into the details. That consultation period, although it's long, is shorter than if the project proponents do that work directly with the federal agencies, the service. And so that's kind of not our lookout. We would continue to address species impacts as a part of to the extent they relate to beneficial uses in the order. So.
And thank you. And how does it affect the timing of a project? Does it, like, I mean, it's always been a long process, but is it faster, shorter, like, any sense of that?
Well, two things to say. We, you know, we always say it's easy to grade an A paper, so actually the process can be quite short. When, you know, application comes in, we say, oh, yeah, you clearly have avoided the resources as much as you can, and you've got mitigation right here. So the process for us is relatively similar, you know, now as before. The difference is this part.
Yes.
The public notice period and coming before the board, which adds, we would say, a minimum of two, but more like 3 months to the end of the process because of the public noticing requirements, the need to respond to comments and that kind of thing.
And can I ask, is our decision at the very end of their entitlement process? Or, like, I guess what I'm asking is, are we the last piece for them to actually move forward with the project, or do you sense that, no, they have lots of work to do with the lead agency and that sort of thing?
Brian, do you happen to recall where things are on this project?
We are the last piece.
Currently, we are the last piece. I just want to emphasize that's not true for many projects, for this project.
But it's true for this one, and it could be true for future ones. And so I am asking all these questions to just sort of highlight the fact that these changes on the federal legislative side have real implications for us as an agency, the work we're required to do, the staff we need to have, but also on the regulated community and ultimately on the housing stock in this case. And so I appreciate you making all efforts to expedite this, but as a board, for us to also understand that we are sometimes the last piece of the puzzle for somebody who's really trying to move something forward. So I don't know. I'm just being thoughtful and reflective about, you know, some of these decisions that are being made and then what the implications really are. And there's more. You know, there are others, but this is one. So thank you for your work on this, and I support this. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to draw the board's attention to just one, I mean, in that discussion about process, one more change that we are currently working on, and I think the board is aware of legislation the governor signed intended to simplify or smooth the CEQA process for certain housing projects statewide. And one of the things, Ms. Batty, that we've done as a part of issuing creek and wetland field permits or protection permits has been to try and engage early and often, including with the CEQA process as a sort of daylighting or communication requirement so folks know you know, what the path is before them, and they can walk down it. They can know the expectations. So the change that we're trying to make, as more of these projects are not going to be subject to CEQA review, is to try to figure out how can we get that early and often communication continuing when we don't have this existing structure.
So you're saying that even if it's not subject to CEQA, it's still subject to our regulatory authority?
That's correct.
Yes. Yeah. There's like a lot of nuance here, but I used to be on the other side of this process of applying for permits. It's significant. And so getting out and communicating to the regulated community, that don't be surprised, it's not like it used to be. It is changing. Yeah. Thanks.
Board Member Kissinger.
So one question. I struggle to figure out where exactly this site is and what's there. I've been looking at maps. I looked at it when I got this board package, and I looked at it again, you know, with the description that's there. What's there now, and where is it exactly? I mean, it's not near, that's not right in the bay, so where is it exactly?
It's very close to the Berryessa BART station.
Yeah, that part I got, but I don't really see anything that's not developed there. So
it's the last piece that's not developed. Mm-hmm. It's an area that's currently been used for several decades for storing equipment. It was a trucking company. Mm. And so they have a lot of parking lots that they don't really need for the material they have. It's small business with a large surface area.
Got it. Okay. But I was trying to find the seasonal wetlands there. But anyway, somewhere on there, there's an area that gets inundated.
Yeah, it's interesting is that it may have been excavated in the 50s to collect runoff from the site, a stormwater runoff, large flat site. But it's persisted now for over half a century, so it's become a water of the state. Local wildlife use it for foraging.
It's teeming with fairy shrimp. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that and say I'm sort of with Bill, that first thing I look for is a map. So maybe for future packages, just give us a little site map. That would be helpful. Thanks.
Received and understood. No other comments from board members. I'd like to open the hearing to public comments and ask if there are any other questions or comments from the public.
We have two registrations. I believe they're just here to answer questions. Eric Schooner from the Schooner Company and Jeff Olderberg from San Ramon.
Okay. Do we have any questions or comments for them particularly, board? Do they have any particular comments of their own, Julie? No?
Not that I know of.
Okay. I guess we can move forward. Thank you very much. Eileen, I'm going to turn it over to you for your recommendation.
Great. Thank you. I recommend the board adopt the revised tentative order that would issue the waste discharge requirements for Berryessa Properties, Berryessa Mixed-Use Development in the City of San Jose in Santa Clara County.
So moved.
Second. Received. Board Member Batty and Board Member Gunther, first and second. All right. Ask Julie for a roll call vote.
Beautiful. Board Member Ransom.
Aye.
Board Member Batty.
Aye.
Board Member Gunther.
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger.
Aye.
And Vice Chair Young.
Aye. The motion carries. Thank you very much. And now, Eileen, let's move on to item number 6.
Great. Thank you, Vice Chair Young and members of the board. Wait for the presentation to come up. And so this informational item is going to provide a status update on the implementation of our San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board strategic work plan for fiscal years 24 and 25. Next slide, please. So as you recall, we presented the first strategic work plan since I became executive officer in the spring of 2023, and then did an update in 2024. And then every September, we're trying to get into the habit of reporting out on what we said we're going to do, what did we actually accomplish. And so just to remind the public that the strategic work plan describes our overarching organizational priorities and actions, describes the water quality programs we implement to achieve our mission, and the associated targets, milestones, and performance measures. And today we're going to be reporting on our performance measures for last fiscal year. Next slide, please. And first and foremost,
We at the Water Board are dedicated to serving the public as we work to achieve our mission. This is our top priority, to work to protect water quality, to support the many beneficial uses to the public, some of which are shown in the pictures on the slide. Next slide, please. And then the strategic work plan, which is on our website, covers who we are, what we do, our priorities, and describes our performance measures and targets for the fiscal year. And we have found this document to be very useful as we go out into the public and meet with various communities, because they're not clear what the Water Board does, what SFPUC does, what State Water Board does, what EPA does, Cal EPA. So we have found it to be a very useful document. And now I'm going to turn it over to Ross Stevenson, our Assistant Executive Officer, who's going to present on our performance and key accomplishments. So next slide, please.
Thanks, Eileen, and good morning, Vice Chair Young and board members. First, I'm going to give an update on our accomplishments from the past fiscal year for our three key organizational priorities listed on this slide. Next slide, please. First is climate action. So we continue to incorporate climate actions into our program activities and to utilize our authority to promote and advance climate adaptation planning, coordination, technical assistance, and permitting. We recognize that addressing climate change is critical for the long-term protection of water quality. This slide shows some of our many Bay Area partners that we are collaborating with on adapting to climate change. Next slide, please. The Bay Restoration Regulatory Integration Team, or BRIT, was formed in 2019 to improve the permitting process for multi-benefit habitat restoration projects designed to adapt to rising tides. In the last year, two projects were fully permitted and two projects completed construction. Pictured here on the left and center are the before and after photos of the City of Richmond's Terminal 4 project, which completed construction in late 2024 and was featured on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle in May. The project removed the largest derelict creosote wharf in San Francisco Bay, including more than 2,000 pilings, some of which you can see here on the left. As part of the shoreline stabilization, the project also installed oyster reef balls shown on the right, which are being colonized by oysters and other species. Next slide, please. And in our cleanup program, we continue to integrate climate action into our work. Last fall, we reported to you on the work done to identify cleanup sites potentially vulnerable to sea level rise and groundwater rise, creating the map shown here with various types of cleanup sites overlaid on potentially vulnerable areas. Over the course of the last fiscal year, we required vulnerability assessments at 12 active shoreline cleanup sites. And we've, perhaps most importantly, we've incorporated vulnerability assessment into our low-threat case closure process. And in the process, and as a result of that, we included required or performed vulnerability assessments for 16 cases during the closure process last year. Next slide. Next priority is racial equity. Racial equity and environmental justice. So in 2023, we finalized our racial equity and environmental justice plan. The cover page is pictured on the left here. We continue to prioritize program activities to protect water quality and beneficial uses in communities that have experienced historic racism and environmental injustice. We continue to build and sustain relationships with affected communities and the stakeholders involved in those communities. Next slide. For instance, as part of overseeing the ongoing cleanup of contamination at the former Hunters Point Naval Shipyard in San Francisco, we continue to engage regularly with the community. Next slide. Let's shift to workforce planning and development. So we continue with our ongoing efforts to attract, train, and retain a talented, diverse, and inclusive workforce. We, like many other organizations, face some headwinds in that we continue to have staff and managers with many years of experience retire, and we continue to prioritize the transfer of knowledge. For example, our land disposal program manager retired in June after 25 years of state service. During the last couple of years, he worked to compile a 60-plus page primer on that program that's going to prove invaluable for staff in that program, for our own staff in that program, as well as for other regional board staff working in that, other regional board staff working in that same program. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to shift and highlight accomplishments and ongoing work in our water quality control programs organized in the four categories shown here: plan and assess, regulate, clean up, and enforce. Next slide, please. First up, plan and assess. This includes plans and policy development, such as basin planning, total maximum daily load development, as well as monitoring and assessing the condition of waters. Next slide. In this category, during the past fiscal year, we completed the triennial review of the San Francisco Bay Basin Plan that was adopted in May. This slide shows a graphic ranking of candidate basin planning projects. Just to point out a couple here, the top one is designating tribal and subsistence fishing beneficial uses, and the second one is developing a climate change policy related to shoreline adaptation, specifically to facilitate beneficial use or reuse of sediment, dredge sediment. Next slide. In the regulate category, which includes our wastewater and stormwater programs, our creeks, wetlands, and bay habitat restoration protection program, land disposal program, and agricultural lands program. Next slide. Here we present the numbers of permitting actions and inspections by program and type. As you can see on the left, we've completed over 200 permitting actions, and on the right, inspected over 200 facilities in this past fiscal year. We met or exceeded performance targets in all programs, with the exception of industrial and construction stormwater inspections due to staff vacancies. Next slide. One major accomplishment was the board adopting the third nutrient watershed permit in July of 2024. Robert Schliff will be providing an update today on the work that has been performed since adoption of that permit. Next slide. Also, last month you heard an information item on the Municipal Regional Stormwater NPDES permit, or MRP. The MRP had a significant deadline, requiring most MRP permittees to achieve full control of trash discharge through the storm drain by July of 2025, and the remainder by the end of 2025. Permittees have expended substantial effort on this, and most achieve the requirement on time. In addition, Caltrans continues to increase its efforts to control trash from its Bay Area rights of way. We're going to tell you more about both of those at the December board meeting. Finally, Bay Area municipalities and Caltrans are continuing their efforts to control discharge of trash associated with unsheltered homelessness and illicit dumping. Next slide. In the cleanup category, this is where we direct and oversee cleanup of contaminated sites throughout the Bay Area. Next slide. The two metrics shown used in our cleanup programs for quite some time have been cases moved into remediation and cases closed. The former is a good indicator of source control and elimination of ongoing exposures, and the latter an indication of just completion. The table shows we've exceeded all of our targets in the last year. Next slide. We continue to monitor for contaminants of emerging concern. Per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, are a priority in our cleanup programs. This map of our region shows sites that have been sampled for PFAS. Over the course of the last year, we continued our PFAS work by providing a public PFAS webpage and fact sheet to address frequently asked questions and to point to other resources. We continue to work with local water agencies to identify PFAS sources and support their efforts to treat PFAS-contaminated groundwater. For instance, our recently retired Toxics Cleanup Division Manager, Alec Noggle, spoke at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for Zone 7's new ion exchange drinking water treatment facility this spring. Next slide. One highlight from our Department of Defense cleanup programs is we resolved the longstanding dispute between the Army and the state regarding the former Oakland Army Reserve Base. This resolution will now allow the Army to move forward with developing a sediment cleanup plan. In addition, at numerous sites, we directed the Department of Defense to evaluate climate change impacts when evaluating the effectiveness of cleanups and to address PFAS, two highlights being Hunters Point Naval Shipyard and Moffett Naval Air Station during their five-year reviews. Next slide. In June of this year, PG&E and the Port of San Francisco began a significant sediment remediation project on the northern waterfront. This consists of dredging and capping between Pier 39 and 43.5, which is going to take place over a five-year period. This complex project included significant interdivisional, interagency, and stakeholder coordination. Staff conduct regular inspections to observe dredging and capping, pictured in the upper right, and also inspecting the handling of dredged sediment at the Montezuma Materials Handling Facility, pictured at the lower right. Next slide. Our region has been publishing environmental screening levels known as the Environmental Screening Levels, or ESLs, for over 20 years to support our cleanup programs. They help staff and discharges quickly identify and evaluate potential risks to human health and the environment. In fiscal year 2025, we began updating the ESLs to be consistent with latest science and information. A major highlight for this particular update is we increased the number of PFAS compounds with ESLs from 2 to 16 to support our PFAS investigation efforts. The updated ESLs were published in July, and a notice was sent out to the mailing list, which includes about 2,000 subscribers. Next slide. Our fourth category is enforcement. We pursue violations in a fair, firm, and consistent manner, always focused on compliance. The photos on this slide are examples of violations for which we have pursued enforcement. On the left shows trash discharges. In the center is a discharge of silty water to a creek bed. And on the right is a failed silt fence at a construction site, the result of inadequate erosion and sediment controls, causing a discharge of sediment-laden water to a storm drain. Next slide. Last year, we pursued 21 cases that had monetary penalties totaling about $4.8 million, about half of those funds being used to supplement environmental projects, including creek restoration and bay water quality monitoring. An informational item is included in your board packet summarizing information, enforcement activities for the past fiscal year. And with that, I will now hand it back to Eileen. Next slide, please.
Great. Thank you, Ross. So in closing, the strategic work plan is a roadmap that guides us in achieving our mission. Before you is a photo that was taken in October of last year at the all-staff field trip at Lake Merritt. This is the team of talented environmental scientists, geologists, engineers, attorneys, and administrative professionals that are passionate about working together every day to protect the Bay Area's water resources. I want to thank each of them for all our accomplishments. The diversity of the Water Board team and their many talents adds to the richness of the organization and the results that we can deliver to the public. Finally, I want to thank our board for all your support throughout the past year. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen. I want to see if the board members have any questions or comments. Board Member Ransom.
Just a quick one on workforce. You know, I know it's a challenge. We talk about it quite a bit. And in reviewing this work plan, it's one of the better documents I've ever seen that really clearly articulates what's happening. But I think equally as important is it really has a good tracking mechanism that if something's not happening, it clearly shows it. If it's in progress, you know, likewise. And if it's done, yay, you know, you get credit for it. So my question is, with that document, with it being on the website, with it being advertised, is that helping us attract staff to fill a lot of these positions that are being vacated by retirements and that sort of thing?
Excellent question. So, yes, Mark, we have a recruiting team. Once again, they're very creative, and we have found it to be very useful. I've been pleasantly very surprised. We have a number of recruitments going on in the last couple of months, a couple of manager vacancies, 4 supervisor vacancies, and staff vacancies. And I continue to be so impressed, just like you at the State Water Board, that I think because of our mission, the great people we have, the culture that we have, that we continue to recruit a great pool of talented individuals. And I think the strategic work plan's been very helpful in clearly articulating what we do. So people can decide, do I want to work in watershed, or do I want to work in planning, or maybe I want to go work in watershed, and then maybe after a few years I'm going to go to planning, or maybe I really like site cleanup. So I think it's been very helpful not only to the public when we go to community meetings like the Hunter's Point, but also when we go out to job fairs and to different universities, and just people calling up asking, like, what do you do? I'm an environmental scientist. I'm looking for a job. And we can give them the strategic work plan. We can talk to them. So we have found it to be a very useful tool.
And just a quick follow-up on that, I notice I get a lot of these notifications on LinkedIn, you know, for positions, and they've been coming in quite frequently, which I think is great. I review a few of the descriptions. They look really good, but I can't recall if any of them have a link to the strategic work plan. So if they do, great. If they don't, that might be something to add into that so that it makes it easy for people to, you know, just get a full picture.
Great, great suggestion. Yeah. We'll make sure that going forward, that's okay. A great idea. And I know when the staff have held these workshops even to tell people how to apply to the state, because it's not like a private job.
Right.
You interview and you get the job. You know, there's a process of submitting apps, and then there's this interview panel. You may not hear for months because the person in Sacramento might be on vacation for 3 weeks, you know, with the furloughs. And so it's a very different process. So the other thing I'm really proud of, in fact, Rebecca's part of the recruiting team, is that they've put on some, basically Zoom meetings in the evenings and at lunchtime for people who want to know how to apply and talk about the work we do at the Water Board. Thanks. So special shout out to our Recruiting for Racial Equity team that we have. That's made up of about 10 different individuals from each of the divisions who really come together, it seems like every 3 weeks, to kind of talk about the openings, what we can do, and get the word out. So thank you.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Board Member Kissinger?
I had a couple quick questions, but before I get to the questions, I just wanted to acknowledge and, I guess, say I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more attention. I took note of the picture of the seagull with the Fritos bag and the fact that you've harnessed the wildlife, and particularly the seagulls, to engage in trash collection is amazing. Fantastic. I mean, Caltrans must be incredibly excited about that. Here are my questions. First off, on the DOD map, it was an acronym I didn't recognize, FUDS, F-U-D-S. What is that?
Those are formerly used defensive sites. So these are sites that have subsequently been transferred to other parties.
I see.
And so those are overseen or handled by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So even if it was, even if it was like a Navy site, but it had gone to, say, a private party, and it's now time to come back and clean it up, it goes to the Army Corps.
Yeah, got it. Okay. And the other question I had was, I remember when we talked about this plan back in 24, and we were talking about the scoring and coming up with the priority list. Two questions from that. One was, what's the kind of the metrics that are used in that scoring? And two, I assume we're going to do a new strategic plan then for 25 or 26 or 26-27, however we characterize it. When does that happen? When is that scoring going to take place?
So, and I just want to be clear about this, the scoring, so first off, we plan to bring an updated strategic plan to the board next spring. So kind of the plan is to bring it in the spring, and it'd be a two-year plan looking at two fiscal years out with our milestones, targets, and performance measures on the tables included, and then to report out in September. And then I wanted to just clarify, Board Member Kissinger, your question about scoring as far as like if it's complete or not, is that what you're referring to?
Just to be perfectly blunt, I was curious how the subsistence fishing came ahead of climate change. What was the metrics that did it that way?
Based
on public health? Was it how did that get decided?
So that was done separately. So that was done as part of the triennial review, where the public got to weigh in on prioritize. So that's separate from, that's the updating the triennial review that we do every 3 years was one of our goals for the strategic work plan. And as Ross pointed out, that we brought that to the board earlier this year. And out of that process came those projects as far as that's what the triennial review is focusing on. That doesn't deal with the site cleanup program or the groundwater toxics program or necessarily what Watershed is doing. That's focused for the planning group, and as they look at they're responsible for the basin plan and basin plan amendments and looking at what total maximum daily loads or what basin plan amendments, that came out top. So that's how that came out. So that's just a little part of our strategic work plan.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Anyone else? Board Member Gunther.
I'm standing because my back is hurting, not because I'm trying to escape. So a couple of things. First of all, this is like so important. And what I find really important about it is that we are making ourselves publicly accountable. And I just think given how much buck passing it goes on these days, particularly at the federal level, I'm very proud to be associated with an organization that lays out goals and then assesses how close we got and what we did and didn't do. And so I think that should also serve us as a recruitment tool. In several places where we didn't make the mark, it appears that it's because of staffing limitations. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean we had a position we were trying to fill, or we have goals that actually require more people than we currently employ?
So it's because we require more people than we employ. And to remind you, as part of closing the budget deficit last year, we had five staff positions that were eliminated. So each of the divisions basically were giving up MPDS, lost a position, groundwater, toxic. So we lost positions. And so what we've had to do, and the management team's done a great job, is we have to continue to prioritize. So we have to do more with less. At the same time, one of the things I've mentioned to a few of the board members is we also have a lot of long-term tenured staff who've been here a long time, who have a lot of vacation, and also during the pandemic, they were furloughed 2 days a month, and nobody was going anywhere. Everybody was sitting home working. So we have a lot of employees with hundreds and hundreds of hours of vacation, and then per the state, you have to do a vacation leave reduction plan, and so we have people that are also gone for 3 weeks at a time. They're back. They're gone another 3 weeks. So we don't even have all the positions we have. Apart from losing five positions, we have a number of staff who are taking off 8 weeks a year, but it's because they have to as part of the state's requiring them. They're not cashing them out. So I just want to be clear that we have a number of people who are taking a lot of time off, and that's great. We want to support them. A lot of them, I think, come here for the flexibility of at the state that they know that they can take time off. So it makes it challenging when we laid out that plan 2 years ago, and we now have staff are being furloughed. So July 1st of this year, as part of managing the budget, staff are furloughed 5 hours a month. So 5 times 12 is 60 hours a year now. And that equates to quite a few more days in addition to their leave. So
a lot of the reasons we didn't meet was just we did not have the staff resources. We continue to do well filling positions. I would not use that as the reason for...
Well, I think it's probably worth somehow noting that in the next one. I mean, what does staffing limitations mean? I mean, it could mean that our management is so unattractive, nobody wants to come work here. That's not what it means.
No.
Right. And, well, I know we don't want to, like, sort of point fingers anywhere. The governor has a challenging job trying to balance our budget and all. But those realities are what's influencing our ability to meet our strategic objectives, and I think that's worth noting, okay?
Yeah, and then just to respond, when we put this strategic work plan together 2 years ago, I had no idea that we were going to have five positions swept from us. I did not project the budget deficit that occurred and how the state was going to manage it. So when we put the plan together, we thought we'd have five more positions. Also, when we put the plan together, but when we do our update next year, we'll know we don't have those five positions. We'll take into account the furloughs that, you know, is people are going to be gone more time, and we'll take that into consideration as we develop the next plan.
Okay. And we might want to consider a couple of things. One is that these sort of events, that is, as when we have our strategic plan, we also need to, like, acknowledge what might happen. Right, that we anticipate we're going to have to deal with events like this based on what's happened in the past. The other thing I wanted to note is that workforce development is really important because our projects, we have individual projects that even outlast people who work here for 25 years, and that the nature of the job we have been tasked with is, like, intergenerational. And I think that that's an important thing for us to acknowledge. It's not true for everything that we do. But for the site cleanup, for some of the wetlands restoration, these are things that are going to require the handing off from one staff member to another. The idea that somebody on staff wrote a historic account to help with the next generation of members, that's really incredibly important. And I'm really glad to hear that that exists. And I hope that we will, in the next version, we can acknowledge this aspect of workforce development as vital to achieve these intergenerational goals that we have been tasked with.
Thank you, Board Member Gunther. Board Member Batty, go ahead.
I can't be left out. I just have to say, first of all, I wrote down here, thank you, amazing, thoughtful, clear, transparent. I mean, I've been on the board. I'm starting a new term. I've been here 8 years, and it's really a very wonderful growth in the organization to see. So I want to say thank you. Two things that are on my mind as I read this, I just think about when we started this process, Eileen, and it was a couple years ago now, and we were living in a different world with some very different priorities, particularly with our federal partners, but overall what's happening in our country. So it'll be, I'm sure, something you'll take into consideration as you look at priorities going forward. And I would also guess that in some cases we're swimming upstream, and that doesn't make it any easier as well. And then on the I hope positive side, I'm going to keep talking about, and I know we're looking at it, is the potential for AI and other technologies to make our work more efficient, faster, more with less, all those things. We are actually using it at the farm now in all sorts of ways I never thought possible, and it is pretty amazing. So I try to be optimistic about these technology breakthroughs, and I hope that'll be part of our next conversation.
Yeah, and in fact, Julie and I were just talking yesterday. Julie and I know many others have now come out with some training that they're offering. I think the first class is next week for co-pilot. So we are looking, and I've been talking to people at other agencies. I spent quite a bit of time this weekend talking with a number of people at other agencies how they're looking to leverage AI to where we can achieve efficiencies. So yes, there'll be more to follow.
I'm going to just share one because I am doing land-based work, and we've been doing a lot of, we're using ChatGPT, but we're taking photos and giving a prompt of, I want to improve this in this way, and it will give a detailed list and a photo of what the after looks like, and it's very detailed. Construction methods, retention methods, how to deal with the, we have areas of flooding on the property, how to deal with that, and what controls to put into place. In about 30 seconds. It's not that it doesn't need to be checked, it does, but it's pretty fascinating. So anyway, just a little insight.
And I don't mean to jump ahead, but you'll see Robert's presentation, which I'm very excited about coming up here in a few minutes. And you'll see that Robert used, you may not know, but I do know that Robert used AI for some of his slides, and I think they turned out great. And it was amazing how fast he did it. So talk about efficiencies. As I think about how I used to do PowerPoint presentations in my previous job and want pictures of something, it's amazing how you can leverage AI. So hold on for a few minutes, and you'll get to see Robert's great presentation.
I like it. Thank you very much. That I'll open the hearing to public commenters. Julie, do we have any online registrants?
We have one commenter, Dorinda Shipman, and I'm not sure if she's in person or online.
I do not see her in person, so let's assume online. Wes, you see her there?
She declined to be promoted, so Dorinda, if you're still online, please accept the promotion so we can hear you speak.
Don't hear her. So if she comes back on a little bit later, we'll see what we can do.
She's on now.
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
The floor is yours. Thank you.
Apologies for the delay there, and thank you, board members, executive officer, and staff for this opportunity. My comment was in regards to the board's tentative order regarding NPDES permit CAG 912002, and wondering if this may not be the right time to discuss, if that will be discussed later in the meeting.
Give us one moment.
We don't have an NPDES permit on the board agenda for today.
So this is, I believe, a tentative order that focuses on PFAS compounds?
Yeah, and that is not on today's board agenda.
All right. Apologies for that. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you, Dorinda. I'll ask one more time. Do we have anyone else in the audience who would like to speak? No? Seeing no comments, I will bring it back to us and Eileen. I guess we can move on to information item number 7. Will you please introduce it?
Yeah, so number 7 is just the staff summary report that was in your board packet, summarizes enforcement actions for fiscal year 24-25, including the issuance of settlement of administrative civil liability complaints. Since we covered this in the strategic plan, there's no presentation, but I do want to thank Brian Thompson, our enforcement coordinator, and Bill Johnson, manager of NPDES, for their work leading the region's enforcement efforts over the past year. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from our board members on that? None? That's an easy one. Still, let's make sure we open up to public comment in case there are any. Julie? No online. Anyone in the public here in person? Nope. Seems we're going pretty well here. Okay, and Eileen, will you now share with us item number 8?
Yes. I'm excited to share with you this informational item. It provides an update on the nutrient watershed permit the board reissued in July of 2024 for all municipal wastewater dischargers of nutrients to San Francisco Bay. Robert Schiff, Senior Water Resource Control in the NPDES division,
will provide the overview of the nutrient watershed permit requirements, and he'll describe the progress made in implementing those requirements and expected progress in the upcoming year. With that, I turn it over to you, Robert. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Good morning, board members. I'm Robert Schliff, a senior engineer in the MPDS Wastewater Division. And today I'm going to provide an update on the recent work related to the nutrient watershed permit that you reissued last year. To start, I'm going to provide some background on nutrient management and then update you on current nitrogen loadings to the bay. After that, I will provide an overview of some of the work that has been accomplished this past year. This includes updates to the science plan, preliminary compliance alternatives that dischargers identified to meet final nitrogen limits, a regional scoping plan that dischargers submitted to encourage collaboration, and work we've been doing to amend our basin plan to provide more time for certain types of nutrient reduction projects. To conclude, I will touch on some of the work scheduled for next year. For background, most of the nitrogen load to San Francisco Bay comes from municipal wastewater treatment plants. These plants collectively discharge about a half a billion gallons of treated wastewater to San Francisco Bay and its tributaries every single day. In this map, the orange line shows the boundary of our region, and the little black dots show the municipal wastewater treatment plant discharge outfalls. Because high nitrogen loads from municipal wastewater treatment plants fueled large harmful algae blooms in 2022 and 2023, the nutrient watershed permit requires a 40% reduction in dry season total inorganic nitrogen loads by 2034. And this is necessary to protect aquatic life from low dissolved oxygen levels, harmful toxins, and also to ensure that recreational beneficial uses are protected. So let's see how we're doing. This slide shows collective dry season total inorganic nitrogen loads from all municipal wastewater treatment plants that discharge to San Francisco Bay. It covers a 10-year period starting in 2014 when the board adopted the first nutrient watershed permit. Now please note that the vertical axis shows nitrogen loads on a scale from about 25,000 to 50,000 kilograms per day. As shown by the blue line, nitrogen loads slightly increased from 2014 to 2019, and since that time, there's been about a 10% reduction in loads. And while there is some noise in nitrogen loadings from year to year, the primary reasons for the reduction include the City of San Jose and East Bay Mud optimizing for nitrogen removal, the East Bay Dischargers Authority reducing nitrogen loads, in particular because of upgrades at the Oraloma treatment plant, West County Wastewater District implementing nitrogen removal through treatment plant upgrades, and San Francisco Southeast reducing nitrogen loads because of population declines related to the pandemic. Since 2022, when the large harmful algae bloom occurred, nitrogen loads have stayed about the same. As illustrated by the red dotted line at the bottom of the slide, municipal wastewater treatment plants need to significantly reduce nitrogen loads to meet the final aggregate limit established in the nutrient watershed permit. I also want to cover nitrogen loads from the petroleum refineries. During the July 2024 board hearing, there was some concern about the nutrient watershed permit not regulating them. At the time, we explained that we wanted to gather more data from these facilities that would better represent current conditions. This slide shows that dry season nitrogen loads in 2011 were about 970 kilograms per day, and that in 2024, they have been reduced to about 470 kilograms per day. And this reduction is really for two reasons. The first is the Chevron Richmond Refinery receives recycled water from West County Wastewater District for use in its boilers and cooling towers. However, as I mentioned earlier, in 2017, West County Wastewater District implemented nutrient removal. And this in turn has significantly reduced nitrogen discharges from Chevron. And the second reason is the Tesoro and Phillips 66 refineries converted to processing renewable feedstocks instead of petroleum feedstocks. And this change has substantially reduced nitrogen loads from those two facilities. Now that I've covered nitrogen loadings to the bay, I want to talk about some of the work that has been completed over the past year. First, there was a significant effort put forth to updating the science plan. We now have updated management questions to reflect the 2022 harmful algae bloom and the nitrogen load reductions required by the nutrient watershed permit. There are plans to increase the spatial coverage for monitoring, including moored stations in the North Bay. There's work to advance modeling capabilities, and there are efforts to explore management actions, such as restoring tidal marsh and eelgrass beds to improve the bay's resilience to nutrient enrichment. Finally, there is also work to improve communication to interested stakeholders of the important work that is being accomplished through the science plan. In fact, the San Francisco Estuary Institute recently completed an overview document that describes work completed over the past 10 years. Now, besides supporting the science and tracking discharge loads, the nutrient watershed permit also requires that dischargers make progress towards reducing nitrogen loads. And here are the compliance milestone requirements established in the permit. In 2025, dischargers were required to identify preliminary compliance alternatives and submit a regional study scoping plan. As you can see on this timeline, we'll be getting more information on compliance strategies, in particular in 2027, when dischargers are required to submit compliance plans. In 2029, dischargers will be required to submit design progress reports and a final report for the regional study. I'm going to cover the preliminary compliance alternatives dischargers identified next. So the group annual report submitted in April 2025 characterized dischargers into three categories: those with actions that are underway, those with a compliance pathway identified, and those with preliminary compliance alternatives identified. Now, the most common of the five compliance alternatives identified were using conventional wastewater treatment, followed by optimization and recycled water. As for actions underway, the Bay Area Clean Water Agency expects about a 20% reduction in nitrogen loads from projects that have been identified and are in progress. In July 2025, dischargers submitted a regional study scoping plan. And this is to encourage regional coordination so compliance will be achieved as soon as possible. This regional study requires dischargers to evaluate the cost of nutrient reduction projects, financing alternatives, the impact of nutrient reduction projects on other regulations, such as air emissions and biosolids disposal, to identify options to achieve nitrogen load reductions beyond those required by the nutrient watershed permit, with a focus on multi-benefit solutions, and to consider the development of a nutrient trading program, which has been identified as a compliance pathway by some dischargers, especially those with small nitrogen loads to the bay. So now that I've covered some of the reports dischargers submitted, I wanted to switch gears and talk about the work we've done to address the timeline in which dischargers must achieve compliance with final limits. In response to concerns that granting a maximum of 10 years could disincentivize projects that may provide more community benefits, this board adopted a resolution in July 2024 that directed staff to explore ways to grant more time for multi-benefit projects that would result in nitrogen load reductions. This past year, we worked with the State Water Board and identified the most expeditious path forward would be for the San Francisco Bay Water Board to draft a basin plan amendment. This would allow certain types of qualifying projects, such as water recycling, nature-based solutions, and innovative technologies that require extensive pilot testing, to be granted more than 10 years to comply. As a first step, we drafted a basin plan amendment to authorize compliance schedules longer than 10 years for qualifying projects, but there's still work to be done to make sure the amendment is appropriately crafted to capture all situations where more time may be warranted. As for next year, we'll plan to continue implementing and refining the science plan. This will involve continued monitoring of the bay, special studies, and a gradual improvement in modeling capabilities. With the annual report due in April 2026, dischargers that have not already will be required to identify a compliance pathway to meet final effluent limits. And with next year's annual report, we expect dischargers that plan to select innovative technologies to meet nitrogen limits to include timelines for pilot studies so these projects can be implemented as soon as possible. We also expect to get more information on projects in the implementation phase to better understand expected completion dates, the scope of these projects, and expected nitrogen load reductions. And finally, we'll continue to make progress on our basin plan amendment to ensure that we'll be able to authorize more time for projects that we want to encourage. And before I end, I want to emphasize that we'll continue to collaborate and coordinate with USEPA, the Bay Area Clean Water Agencies, San Francisco Baykeeper, and the San Francisco Estuary Institute. And I'll stop there. I'm ready for any questions that you may have.
Perfect. Thank you, Robert. Yeah. I'll spring back to the board if there are any comments or questions. Board Member Batty.
Robert, can you go back to the slide that showed the timeline and the regulatory compliance, I think it was?
Yeah.
I guess my question, I'll wait a second. Can you go back to, keep going? I was really at the beginning, a little farther. Oh. Was there another?
No, this is just the update of the science plan, and these are the milestones on the permit. Is this what you're referring to?
No, I was looking at the, go back to like the second slide, if you would, Wes. It was this one, yeah.
Oh.
Oop, there. I would love you to talk a little bit more about, you know, the nitrogen levels have been high for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And was the, what we saw, was that the triggering point in 2021 when we had the issues in the waterways? Or, like, how long have we been thinking about how much we need to, what was the trigger in 2022, 3, 4 that made us move forward with this requirements on the reductions?
Oh, well, yeah, it was because of the extent of the harmful algae bloom in 2022. It just resulted in extremely low dissolved oxygen levels over a huge swath of the bay. Mm-hmm. So tens of thousands of fish died, almost 1,000 sturgeon died. And we always knew that there was a concern that the bay was very susceptible to that type of eutrophication, but typically it's been resistant to that because it's really turbid, which limits light penetration. It has strong tides, which prevent, you know, periods of stratification, and it has this healthy clam population that typically graze on the phytoplankton and keep their populations low. But what happened in 2022 is it was warmer. You'd had like a lot of days of just sunshine, not really cloudy. It wasn't that windy, and this harmful algae species, Heterosigma kashiwo, it just exploded, and it's a flagellate, so it can swim. So there's SFEI has identified these periods during the summer when the bay is more susceptible, during these periods of low tide in the summer month when the tides aren't that strong, and it can swim faster than the tide, so it can always stay in that area of light to just continue to grow. And that's what happened then. It's not anything to do with the nitrogen loads. The bay has been susceptible for a while. It's just the physical conditions and allowed it to.
And we don't think that's a one-off. We think that is a continuing high risk. And so this is the outcome.
Yeah, we're concerned it could happen again. So that's certainly the basis for why we required significant load reductions. And that's one of the things that the San Francisco Estuary Institute is looking at this year with the science plan is, what is the probability of reoccurrence? Why did Heterosigma kashiwo explode in 2022, whereas in 2023 there was another bloom in San Pablo Bay, but it wasn't as extensive? So one of the things that they're doing is they have all these samples that they've saved of Heterosigma kashiwo over the years, and they're going to be looking at the different strains to see if there was something special about the 2022 bloom, because the research shows that it's typically susceptible to viruses, but certain strains aren't as susceptible. So they're trying to kind of uncover what had happened.
Well, thank you for this work. I think it's very important, and I appreciate that a little bit more of the background, just to remind us all. Thanks.
Sure.
If I could, this is Bill Johnson. I head up the NPDES Wastewater Division, and I just wanted to add a little bit of context here. So this permit that you issued a year ago was the third version of this permit. So NPDES permits are reissued every 5 years. So it's been 11 years since we first issued a nutrients watershed permit. And the reason we issued that permit 11 years ago is because our scientists were out there monitoring a number of things. And even though we hadn't had this huge algal bloom, a number of the indicators were looking a little funny, like, hey, things seem to be changing here. Things are you know, and we think maybe the bay is losing its resiliency. So we issued the first nutrients watershed permit 11 years ago, and it required sort of advancements in science, more investment in science to understand what's going on. And we were, you know, preparing for the fact that someday we are going to need to do something about nutrients. And so, in fact, you know, years later, we have this huge harmful algal bloom, which kind of confirms the concerns that we put in place, you know, or that we had a decade earlier, but we've had this nutrients watershed permit in place. And so when you see in that chart, there's a reduction there. One of the reasons why the dischargers could get on things and address some of those things as quickly as they could is that they had warning. They were looking at this over the course of a decade, thinking about it, and knew that they might have to step up and reduce nutrients. And so some of those dischargers were prepared to jump on it and make some short-term changes that have made a difference. And then to quickly answer your question, no, we don't think this is a one-off. We don't really understand what the underlying circumstances are that could cause a future algal bloom, but all the indicators indicate that we could see this again.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the science and the long duration of the science to, you know, help us advance what we need to do. So thank you.
Board Member Ransom?
Yeah, just a quick question. Thanks for the presentation. On the compliance milestones, you know, the first item is alternatives and regional study in 2025. Is that done and been submitted, or still work in progress, or?
Oh no, that's been submitted. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it has been submitted.
It has, yes.
So the fact that it's been submitted, has there been any like aha moments in terms of, you know, revolutionary things that, you know, people have proposed, or where does it stand?
I would say the ha-ha moment, seeing that Bill, Robert, I, and others spent last Thursday all day with the BAQA leaders, the Bay Area Clean Water Agency leaders. I think the big ha-ha is they really need more time, that to pilot these technologies takes time, and they may pilot a technology for several years, and it may not work, and then they're back to square one. And so I think that was one of the big things that we've got out of it, is that the work that Bill and Robert and team have been doing to allow more time with this non-TMDL basin plan amendment that we're working on, to allow the dischargers more time than the 10-year compliance schedule policy the State Board allows, is really important. So I feel like we have a good open dialogue. They have a shared vision. They realize that nutrients was the fuel that allowed the harmful algae bloom to spread throughout the bay, resulting in the massive fish kills. So we've all bought into the science. We've done joint fact-finding on the science. But I think the big epiphany, but Robert, add on, is that they've reinforced that they really need more time. There's some innovative technologies they want to try. Also, the cost of constructing projects in the Bay Area is very expensive. A lot of times they're lucky to get two or three contractors to bid on projects. So I think from our day with them last week, those were some of the big things. But they are all committed to working on reducing nutrients. They don't disagree. It may take, you know, longer than the 10-year compliance schedule policy that's allowed by State Board. And they appreciate staff's efforts to work to allow more time. And it's something that we've worked with State Board. Staff, Sean's been briefed on our plan to do a non-TMDL basin plan amendment to allow more time for those who are doing innovative technologies, nature-based solutions, or recycled water to reduce their nutrients.
Okay, thank you. So just as a follow-on to that, just recognizing that this is complex, people need more time, lots of money, lots of science, is there a way for us as board members to keep informed on the progress without burdening staff? I mean, I don't want reports that waste your guys' time, but I'm just wondering along the journey here, so that we don't come back a year from now and have to re-educate ourselves for a week trying to figure out what happened. So something that might, I'm not sure what it might be, but.
So we're planning to give regular updates, and granted, things don't happen super fast, because even trying to work on this non-TMDL basin plan amendment takes time. It takes time for the dischargers to do their planning studies, but we plan to come back at least once a year. We could also put something in an executive officer's report to keep the board apprised of the progress that the dischargers are doing. But they are committed to making progress. It's just it's going to take time to make these very expensive, you know, improvements.
Yeah, and I think something like that, just very simple in your report that doesn't require days to do, but just refreshes our memory.
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you.
Board Member Kissinger.
Thanks very much, Robert. I guess I want to just echo what your comments were, Bill, about how this was identified as a problem a long time ago, you know, at least a dozen years ago. I think I remember you making this presentation, and my reaction was sort of, you know, I think I actually referred to the movie Shakespeare in Love, where the person who's funding the play keeps getting asked how does this end, and he says, I don't know, it's a mystery, and you know, that was sort of your answer to whether or not we're going to have one of these algal blooms, but it's going to happen, and it clearly has. And what I would say is this really is really a model for how the board staff has really done a great job in getting on top of this issue, keeping after it, steadily working on finding a way to address it. And so I really appreciate the work you guys have done on this. And I guess I also wanted to just acknowledge you, Robert, with your retirement. We're very sorry to see you go. But I guess congratulations to you. It's our loss. We're sorry to see you go. You've worked very hard and very well for many years. So thank you.
Thank you for all that.
Any other board members' comments? Oh, Board Member Gunther?
Robert, I'm sorry this will be the last time I'm going to hear you make one of your wonderful presentations to us. And I hope that this community will somehow continue to benefit from your skills and knowledge going forward. You will kind of be like me and find a way to stay involved, because it would be great for all of us. This is, again, another example of an intergenerational problem that we are achieving. I would say this is the first time I've ever heard this permit discussed without Tom Mumley in the room. But it has his, you know, of course, it has his fingerprints all over it. And this will be the last time we're going to discuss it with you. But I trust that there will be other talented staff who will step up. And it also applies to board members, too. This project will probably be completed, you know, well, you'll probably still be on the board. Yeah, I just wanted to ask if this is, of course, bringing back memories for me of our hearing when we adopted this permit. There was one of the BACWA members who chose a tactic that I did not appreciate. But I wanted to know whether in your discussions this week, Central San is now an active and constructive member of this group.
Yes, they participated last week in the all-day meeting last Thursday. They shared about the piloting work that they're doing. They're hiring consultants to do design. They are fully on board and share our vision for reducing nutrients in the bay.
Well, wonders never cease. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. More humor on this today than most days. With that, let's see. Since it's informational, I don't see anything for the public on here. No public comments?
No public comments.
Okay. And anyone in the room, just in case? No? Okay. For the record, there was no correspondence received at this meeting. So at this moment, the board is now closed. There will be a meeting in closed session for item number 10, personnel on the meeting agenda. We will stop all recordings and transcription service, and the board members will relocate to conference room 1505 on the 15th floor. I will reconvene the public board meeting in roughly 90 minutes to formally adjourn our session today. Thank you. And we are back. Thank you for your patience. This concludes the meeting of September 10th for the Regional Water Quality Control Board, Region 2. Have a good week.